So when you start the songwriting process, Helen, so you're always writing lyrics down, or is it you get the guitar, or is it different every time?
Well, sometimes I get a title. I'm just walking along and I have an idea. And other times I sort of get a whole sort of music thing, which is it's not such a good thing, because if I get the whole tune and the melody and the chords and everything all at once, then writing the words is really difficult, because I feel like I'm kind of shoehorning them into something that appeared from somewhere else. But I suppose the thing that happens most often is that I get maybe a line or two of lyrics with the melody actually with them. And then it's just like it's the start of a race, or I don't know, a seed that's going to grow something, you know. Then it's really fun to sort of take that to the guitar and think, oh, how can I make this sound, you know, what can I do with this and how can I take it further? So it's really varied. I know people work in lots of different ways, and I seem to work in everybody else's way as well as my own. So
a question I've asked quite a few musicians over the last couple of months: do you ever feel that a song is gifted to you from the universe, that you're writing it, but you feel that it comes from somewhere else, although it's your song, it feels like it's a gift?
Every song, yeah. Mm. I mean, I almost feel like it's that they're in the air. It's almost like having a net and catching butterflies. You sort of catch something and it sort of lands with you, and then all you do is kind of polish it up and make it into something that's got your own stamp on it. Mm. I think it's the same with all creativity, really. And I know people probably do feel differently about it. But I work as an illustrator too, and sometimes it feels like the drawings are just coming out of the paper, you know, and all I'm doing is pulling them out of the paper with my pencil or whatever. So I think it's something a lot of the time creative people don't really feel like they own their creations, because they do just appear suddenly, even in dreams. I mean, I've woken up, I'll be listening to the radio or listening to a band or something in a dream, and I wake up and I think, oh God, actually, quickly sing that song onto my phone, because I've actually made it up, you know. I've got a friend who does the same thing, you know, she thinks she's listening to something on the radio in a dream and it's actually her song, you know. Quickly record it before you forget, you know.
Good bit of technology there as well.
Yeah, useful.
You recorded lots of sessions for the legendary John Peel. How did you meet, and what was it like doing all that recording?
Well, it was a really funny thing. I mean, everybody I knew listened to John Peel, and when I was working in the shop, because I worked in the shop for quite a long time, and I was so bored, and I used to write him letters at the till and post them to him, and I did it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then I just thought, actually, I bet he doesn't read these, I think I'll stop. And I was listening to the show one night, and I heard him say, oh, I was getting letters from someone called Helen McCookery Book, and she stopped writing, I wonder what's happened. I thought, oh, I'd better start again then. So I did, and we did actually make a record on the local record label, Atrix, with my band The Chefs, and we moved to London, the whole band moved to London, and one day we were having photographs taken at a studio around the corner by a food photographer who wanted to turn into a rock photographer. And we met him in the pub, and he said, oh, can I photograph your band? Come to my studio in the evening and I'll do it when I finish. He was an assistant at this quite swanky place. So we went round there and we ate all the food that had been photographed that day. And then we just released a record called 24 Hours. And me and our manager said, let's go round and stand outside the BBC, because the studio was not far from the BBC. Let's see if we can meet John Peel when he goes into his show, because it's about 9:30. So we walked around to Egton House and we stood outside the studio, and sure enough, John Peel walked past, and I said, oh, hello, I'm Helen McCookery Book. He said, come up to the studio. So there and then, me and Jonathan, our manager, went up to the studio, and I said, I've brought you our new record. He said, oh, great. He said, I'll put it on. I said, oh, no, what if he doesn't like it? So I was talking to him, no, shush, this is really good. And so that's when I first met him, and he was just great. He put the record on, he absolutely loved it, and he played it. And I mean, it all goes to show, you know, there's all these complicated things about how you plug your records and how you do this and how you do that. And sometimes just a really direct thing works, you know. That's living proof that it does. And yes. So I suppose for somebody like me, because I've never wanted to be like a big star kind of person, having an independent trajectory has always been really important. So somebody like him was very important, you know, very important to me, because my next band, Helen and the Horns, the music was completely different. And it was quite nerve-wracking, you know, wondering whether he'd like that, but he did. And I think he always used to really like the mindset of people like me. And even though the music that he played was so different, he'd be playing sort of, you know, massive sort of speed metal type stuff, and then he'd be playing really laid back reggae, and then he'd be playing singer-songwriter stuff. But it was actually the musicians behind it that I think he appreciated. And I think that all of us who got played on his show felt that he understood what we were doing. And we wouldn't always like it necessarily, but he did understand what we were actually doing and how we actually felt about our creativity.
Do you think now is an exciting time in music?
Well, I think it's really exciting. I mean, for a while, there was for a long time, dance music was really, really popular. And it's great music, but it hasn't got that kind of really personal thing that going out and seeing a live band has. And I think there are lots and lots of live bands, and there's something for everybody out there. And yes, it's difficult to make money, but it always was difficult to make money. And there's a myth that in the old days, you know, the old days that didn't actually exist, everybody was making loads and loads of money, but people weren't. Mm. I mean, the times when I was in bands in the late 1970s and early 1980s, I had no money at all. I had a stupid, my diet was, I was eating Weetabix with spready cheese on the top and cup of soup, you know. It was because I really wanted to be out there gigging.
Yeah.
And I think you have to accept that the actual monetary success is a lottery, and so is the fame success. And I think a lot of people I know, they do it because they've got a drive to do it and they like having adventures. And that's why I do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why we love independent music here on Phoenix FM. And there's not enough stations. A lot of the big stations don't really give over that much time to independent
music. I think, you know, I really appreciate independent radio stations. And I always say yes if I get asked to play, because to me this is... I mean, years and years ago in the States, that's what people used to do, didn't they? You know, Elvis Presley and all of those people, they used to travel around and play at lots of stations. And it's just a nice way to do things, because it's not the same as a live gig. And, you know, the presenters like you, it's such a good support, and it's really, really appreciated. So I'm delighted to be here.
You were actually a lecturer at University of Westminster as well.
And the University of East London, although I stopped doing that in the summer.
Mm.
I mean, I did it for 24 years, and in the end, I just... there's this kind of thing where if you are teaching us, it's very kind of... you're giving a lot of yourself to a lot of energy. And I've really enjoyed helping young people, and I'm still friends with a lot of people that I used to teach, you know, but in the end you have to sort of look around and think, actually, maybe I should be using this energy for myself, you know. And it feels like a wrench to get out of it, and it feels difficult to sort of leave it behind, but it's really, really nice to just sort of concentrate on my own music and my own art now. And I do feel like I sort of paid my dues, because I have done a lot of years, you know.
Yeah. You're also an illustrator. You mentioned that, and I've seen some of your work on your website.
Yeah.
When did you discover your love for drawing?
Well, I went to art college. I mean, I was such an introverted young child. I used to spend the whole time drawing, and I went to art college, and I was massively disappointed by art college. It was, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So when punk came along, I kind of diverted to that. But intermittently, at different parts of my life, I've always drawn my artwork for my posters, because it's just fun, you know. I suddenly, oh yeah, I know what I could draw, and you can't sort of hold yourself back from that. But I have worked as an illustrator. I've done comics for a while. I did comics in Brighton. I made independent comics, actually. I used to ask my friends to do stories, and I did stories and things. And I've just started illustrating a children's book. It's going to be a bilingual Welsh-English book on sustainable clothing for primary schools. So that's quite a big project. But it's really interesting, it's really absorbing, you know, and I'm really enjoying it. So I'm hoping to do some more of that alongside the music, because the two complement each other really well. When I'm drawing, I'm in exactly the same zone as I am when I'm recording. It's that kind of, you just get, the rest of the world is completely shut out, and it's just you and what it is you're creating, you know, which is a really great feeling, better than any sort of therapy I could possibly imagine.
You were at the, the explosion of punk. What was that time actually like, living in that moment?
Well, it was really, really spontaneous, and it was really productive. I mentioned before that there were 50 bands rehearsing in this studio in Brighton. Most of them were punk bands. There was a really thriving punk music scene down there. But it was other things as well. It was political protest, it was making comics and zines, it was posters, making clothes, making badges. It was dangerous, it was quite aggressive. You didn't get any special treatment because of being a female or anything like that. But for somebody like me, who'd been brought up in quite a strict religious way, and, you know, mind your P's and Q's and all of that kind of thing, it was a complete liberation to get up on stage and to shout and to, I mean, I was reluctant to play bass when I first started, but it's a fantastic instrument because it's so powerful. You're shaking people's feet, you're hitting them in the chest. If you take the bass away from a band, it's people really notice that you're not there.
Yeah.
And it was my first experience of power, you know, feeling empowered. And I suppose I never ever thought that I would feel like that. I never thought I would feel powerful, and I never thought that I'd have any self-respect. And it did both of those things for me. And even something like today, sort of coming to do a radio show, and I didn't know, obviously we knew each other online, but sort of going and meeting people that you don't know, somewhere that you don't know. I mean, a lot of people my age are kind of sitting watching telly, you know, and it's just kind of, I think the whole thing about punk was getting people to really engage in their own lives and to take control of their own lives and to say what they felt, even if, I mean, lots of punks really disagreed with each other. I don't think I've ever had so many arguments in my life, you know. It wasn't a culture where everybody thought the same thing or said the same thing or even made the same sort of music. But it was quite a liberating thing to be part of, with all its drawbacks as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And also, you've been published as well. You've written books.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done so much. Tell us about that, because one of them was a documentary as well.
That's it. It's called Stories from the Sheep Hunts, which I made with Gina Birch from The Raincoats, who's a friend of mine. I've got two daughters who are now in their 20s and early 30s, but so I had children. I was doing lots of workshops and things on council estates, helping people to write songs and stuff like that, because I wanted to pay back, because I'd been given such a lot of help by people when I first started. And I suddenly thought, actually, you can't have children and not have any money. This life that, you know, this life I've been leading of kind of bits of money here and there and sort of depending on people, you know. So I applied for a job at the University of Westminster. I didn't get it and saw it advertised again the next year and I thought, right, I'll make damn sure I get it this time. So I got interviewed and ended up working there, which was good because I got the school holidays. And almost as soon as I got there, I said, I've noticed there are no books about women punks in the library, because lots of academics were writing about punk because it was such a recognisable subculture. But everybody was ignoring how many women there had been in the bands. And so I was allowed there to do a PhD as part of my work, which was great because they can be expensive things to do. I had a fantastic supervisor, Dave Lang, who was very strict with my writing because I'm dyslexic and I can be a bit, you know, wobbly with where I'm going. He made me throw away the first 20,000 words, which, God, you know. And that ended up, somebody came to the university and said, oh, I'm looking for people to, you know, for books. And I just finished this PhD. And I said, oh, what about my PhD? He said, absolutely perfect. So it went through this editorial process and came out as a book called The Lost Women of Rock Music. And I just did one of my favourite things, which is what you're doing now, is interviewing people. I just thought, who can I interview next? So Viv Albertine, Gina Birch, all of these sort of women who've been in punk bands, Leslie Woods from the Au Pairs, and they all had really interesting different stories to tell. And I just kind of put them together into this book and gave an overview, because it was an academic book, so I gave an overview of it. And I wrote a book, chapter about the Brighton punk scene and how being part of a scene actually helps women to feel like they can join in something. And that's what became the film. The film's not out in general release, although there's a slight possibility, touch wood, that it might be shown at the Tate Gallery at some point, so which just found out last week. So I hope I haven't jinxed that by talking about it.
I'm sure not. Yeah. The song we're going to do next, we were talking about favourite lyrics. I asked you off air, what was your favourite lyric, the one that you've gone, that's good. So it's in this next song you're going to do, isn't it?
Yes. And it's called, it's just a very simple idea. It's "All I Want Is the Sun to Shine for You." And that's actually the title of the song. And the idea is that when you come across a person who's feeling pain or distress, and I think, you know, a lot of people have been through terrible things during the pandemic, and it's a kind of trying to will things to be better for people, which it doesn't always work, but I think that if you try really hard, then maybe people understand that you're empathising with them and it makes them feel a little bit better about things. So that's what the song's about.
Thank you very much for coming in today. Thank you very much. It's been wonderful to have you in the studio. So interesting. You could have been here for hours, haven't you?
Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. I knew Bob was going to enjoy this interview. So you're going to leave us with a song. So thanks very much for coming in. Helen McCookery Book.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.